everybody. Ringo here. Beautiful day in LA. What?
So, it was good to be able to kind of get it out in a song.
The whole, you know, origin of where we're all coming from.
I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.
I believe that's the rare version that we didn't use, right?
That was the lost Womack tapes.
The lost Womack tapes, yes. Yeah.
Ken actually put that together.
Get I ahead, did. Ken. And I,
yes, you did.
I used the little-known record scratching effect. That was not, no records were actually harmed.
Good.
It worked.
Good.
Maybe the one. In any event, welcome to our one of our special live video performances, and it will be on Monday night,
yes.
Heavily edited or not at all by Kid, which will be great because it will start with her sort of disappearing and walking away.
I know.
from the screen. So we're here tonight, today, sort of tonight. Oh, it's 7 o'clock.
It's tonight.
Yeah, it's always night somewhere. But in any event, to talk about how would you say it, Ken, the more experimental. Solo Beatles efforts?
How the Beatles and their solo careers adapted to changes in musical styles. Also, we can combine that with working with contemporary artists of the time.
And I should say that both Kit and Ken have created lists. Ken's, may I, is very neatly typed, you know, like very, very precise. Kit's, is scribbled like a mad doctor. God, look at that. Folks, this is not the writing of a healthy person.
Somewhat deranged.
I sure can.
Kit says she can read this.
Sure.
Wow, good luck. All right. So they will each discuss various examples and suitably pontificate about them. I will play, as we did in our previous session, examples from them when appropriate, and then I will pick who's right, thereby sowing the seeds of pain for them in their own personal relationship, and elevating myself in the process.
Okay,
that's my whole game plan. I say it to you live. So, Kit, please begin reading the mad scrawl of your notes.
Well, you know, we talked about... what are you doing?
I don't think people will believe what that
God.
Is.
You're nuts. So this is what the show is like. By the way, we're on every other Monday, 9 p.m. Eastern, on Facebook Live first, and then we're on YouTube. We're on all different audio. You know, we got, Google Play. We're on everything, Spotify. So anyway, what we talked about was times that the solo Beatles adapted to more, you know, modern sounds. And I think Ken Michaels and I were talking about how, you know, people were so upset when Paul collaborated with Kanye West, and, you know, other times where Paul has recorded some stuff that, particularly Paul, that people said, you know, what is he doing using electronica? What is he doing? You know, stick to the old Paul. So we started talking about, you know, when were some times where they successfully transitioned into, you know, more modern sounds, and other times where they weren't so successful. So, you know, let's start with Wings track, and it's appropriate to bring this up because we're probably going to hear this later tonight, which is Goodnight Tonight. Now, this was recorded and released during the disco era. And, you know, this is about as close to disco as you know, Paul officially got. I think he did this very well because, yeah, it's got a disco beat, very danceable, but it doesn't, you know, he's not overwhelmed by the music. You know, his voice is still up front. It still has that melodic quality. There's also interesting instrumentation. You've Lawrence Juber, that incredible flamenco guitar part. Steve Holly with the, I mean, that incredible drumming on there, I think that really makes the track. So it doesn't sound dated today. I mean, you're not hearing the bus stop or anything like that. You know, it's McCartney, but incorporating a trend of the time, and I think he does it very well.
And that intro, of course, as you said, is just superb.
Yeah.
Absolutely superb.
Incredible Paul bass, too.
Great example too of Paul almost using the bass like a lead instrument, right?
Well, he does that a lot throughout his career.
Absolutely, and it's a wonderful effect, certainly. Well done, and you could see that there.
See, good night tonight.
That does not say good night.
It says
the devil is in the room. Well, now that's scary. If I were you, I would leave. I should point out. That we will have some trivia questions tonight, right, Ken?
Okay,
sure. Yep.
And
no, I thought we were, right?
I always have a few ready.
He has a few at the ready. And I should say...
And there are prizes.
Yeah, there are prizes. Kit has prizes for everybody, first of all.
Now, wait a minute.
Is that a pile of...
Oh, yes. These.
Yeah, no,
yep, everybody here gets one of it's our like, more chalk pens.
Look, it's like when you go to the dentist's office, right? And you get to reach into the... We're going to let you reach into the toy box as you leave.
Okay, I wasn't sure where you were going there, but now I get it. All right.
Yeah, it wasn't promising.
The dentist?
It wasn't promising, yeah. And then we do have some more elaborate prizes, too, out there. Ken Michaels.
About Good Night Tonight, what I'd like to say, first of all, I always remember interviewing Lawrence Schuber several times where he insists it's not disco, it's a dance track. Mm-hmm. And this is coming from a guy that's done a lot of session work and he can distinguish one from the other. But what I will say is that Good Night Tonight sounds like no other song that's out there.
Right.
It's so distinctively Paul. And it's not a song that's just awash in a disco feel. I couldn't hear Rod Stewart singing the song. I couldn't hear Elton John doing it. It's so Paul. And that intro and that flamenco guitar you were talking about, it's so quirky. You know, it's very rare that you hear a combination of combination of the flamenco guitar, Spanish guitar, with a dance beat. The only other time I could think of was with Santa Esmeralda.
Oh, yeah.
When they did Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood, the animal song, with the Spanish feel to it. But still, the way that Good Night Tonight starts the way it does is so unique to itself, and that's one of Paul's best bass lines.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And those guitar solos, the call and response later, just beautiful stuff. I remember reading a review of Back to the Egg when it came out in, was it June 1979?
Mm-hmm.
And it said, notice that the album does not have Good Night Tonight on it. One, it probably wouldn't have fit. And two, by the way, it's not a disco song because it has too many words, is what the Houston Chronicle writer authored that day. It was very interesting.
Wow.
Actually, there was a picture sleeve that had the title on it, and underneath it said disco song, which Robert Rodriguez posted on Facebook.
Did you lay that on LJ and say, look, dude, you're wrong?
I didn't know that happened. Oh. I didn't know it came out that way. But.
Well, he's out on the floor right now. I think we're going to hit... Take a mic. I'm kidding. No. We're going to interrupt the concert. Very good point. Now, Ken, do you have an item that you want to share first?
Well, I didn't even know if I should bring this up, only because when Silly Love Songs came out, there were a lot of people who called it disco, even though I never thought of it as being disco. But yet, it was such a successful song. It was number one in this country for 5 weeks, and according to American Top 40 with Casey Kasem, was the number one song of 1976, so it had success all over it. And I think another one of Paul's great bass lines in his solo career, and so much work poured into all the different sections of that song and all the harmony work that came along with it. So I think there was a lot of work that Paul put into Silly Love Songs with the band in particular. So again, I don't know if you'd call that disco. I don't, but some people did.
If it's disco, it's hard to call it a disco song or a dance track, right? I mean, the complexity of it almost belies something that you'd experience in a club. Given I have not spent the time you may have on studying the discrete sections, but there are several. And of course, different kinds of layers, right? The song grows as it goes forward, has great sound effects.
And counter melody.
Stuff and this is a debate, by the way, we frequently have on our show, and we'll always continue to have, and that is, you know, when will Paul revive a song like this, or perhaps perform A Good Night Tonight? You know, those, I think they would be welcome on any set list.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people that would love to hear Silly Love Songs in particular.
It's been a long time, right?
Well,
it was the Wings Over America tour.
Exactly.
Quite a bit of distance there.
But, you know, I was just saying before, counter melody. There's three melodies going on at the same time in Silly Love Songs. That's extraordinary. Mm-hmm. You don't hear that in pop music. Maybe two at the same time, but not three.
How many people remember when it was number one?
Oh.
Not bad.
Not
bad at all. Okay. Okay, Kit, do you want to try to decipher more of the alien text?
Certainly. Let me do that. Well, my next example is from George Harrison, and I feel that he really demonstrated how to correctly update your sound, and that would be on Cloud Nine. Cloud Nine was, you know, to me, it was both a contemporary record, you know, of course, Jeff Lynne producing. It was a contemporary record, but it was also, you know, classic. I mean, it had some Beatlesque elements to it. And again, it didn't try to make George Harrison sound like something he wasn't. You know, there were no hip hop beats or anything like that. I mean, it was classic. And one of my favorite tracks, I know everybody says Got My Mind Set on You, and that was a wonderful track. And many of my friends, and this came out when I was in high school, many of my friends didn't know him, but as soon as they heard that song, they became fans. But what I want to focus on is one of my favorites, This Is Love. That's always been one of my all-time favorite tracks from that album. And it's, again, what I'm talking about. It's got Beatlesque elements to it. It's got some, you know, it's got some strings. But as I said, it's got that classic Harrison sound. It's catchy. The drums, I mean, you know, the drums for me are always kind of a giveaway that, oh, this is a Jeff Lynne production. But it still was contemporary for the time. It fit in on the charts. It wasn't a huge hit. I do remember seeing the video for it on VH1 and all that. Remember when they played music, you know, it just, to me, was it just fit in with 1987. It just was so contemporary, yet, as I said, didn't try to turn him into something he wasn't.
Let's listen to a few bars of that just to refresh some memories. And this really must have shown those high school friends of yours.
Darn stirring.
Yeah, I bet.
And the lyrics, classic George Harrison, you know, could be romantic, could be spiritual. You know, that was his calling card when it came to writing music, and he incorporated that again. But as you said, very contemporary.
I think so. Ken?
Jeff Lynne and George Harrison, it was a perfect marriage of the two. What I like most about Cloud Nine was that it doesn't sound like a Jeff Lynne album with George Harrison on vocals. There's a, you know, like I said, a nice balance between the two. And, you know, Jeff Lynne had that sensibility being the big Beatle fan that he was. He knew what was right for George. And it did give him a contemporary sound of the late 80s, and it worked really well. You know, and they wrote great material together too, also with the Traveling Wilburys. So, yeah. Although I would add that, you know, when Jeff Lynne worked with someone like Paul, there was less of a Jeff Lynne sound to me, like on The World Tonight. Mm-hmm. There's more of it with Cloud Nine, and I think less of it with Brainwashed. But, yeah, I think the two of them were a perfect team.
Well, it does say a lot about that era, right? Because that was an era where, unlike the 60s, where there were one or two producers, that if you worked with them, notably the tycoon of teen, Phil Spector, you know, when you work with Phil, you had a Phil Spector, right?
Right.
In this case, there were several producers who had a kind of cachet, a certain kind of niche that they performed, and Jeff was one of them. Mm. So that also was part of that period. And does say a lot about that period. And I think we should also, you know, pick up on what you said, Ken, in the sense that for George, working on this album and then with the Wilburys was an incredible return after a pretty long decade. You know, it was a wonderful moment for him, and especially knowing what we know about his untimely demise, very powerful. So where would you go in response to Kit on this very legible list I'm looking at?
Why don't we tackle a song that might be rough for some?
Oh, nice.
Oh, now, I see what you did.
Ken there. Michaels, folks.
Might be. Oh. How about Drowning in the Sea of Love from Ringo, ooh, which was a disco attempt right there. Which, when it first came out, I was okay with it. I wasn't crazy about it. I like it a lot more now than I did back then. I don't think Ringo's vocals are that great on that particular song. But I like that arrangement, and I like the fact that he tried to step into the disco era and try to sound a little contemporary. I think it kind of works, especially with the background singers, the female singers that he had on there. Coming from Ringo the Fourth, which only had a few other songs that you could even maybe call disco. Simple Love Song, maybe. Actually, Just a Dream, which was one of his B-sides, has a disco feel to it. But, you know, I think it worked for Ringo. I don't think it's going to blow anybody out of the water, but I think, you know, he did a decent job with it.
Is it safe to say from your perspective that Ringo would be the least experimental of the solo artists?
That's tough. Yeah, probably. I mean, George Harrison is very eclectic
all
over the place.
I just want to see you agree with me.
Oh, yes, yes. Absolutely, Ken.
Thank you.
Well, you since you gave everybody permission to attack me before.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm a little disappointed, quite frankly. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah,
I would say nobody has. You're going to get prizes for that. That's what the prizes are for. All right, here's Ringo. Eventually. Ken, it is true, right, that only a few years later, Stevie Nicks would be inspired by the lyrics to write Sarah for the Tusk album, that nice double album by Fleetwood Mac.
No, that's not true.
He he's right that time. That's true. All right, Ken.
Well, just to say, I you know, that was a song that it took a while to grow on me, but it did, and it, you know, it's surprisingly effective. I mean, yes, it doesn't break any new ground or anything, and as you said, you know, maybe not his all-time best vocal performance, but it works. You know, I mean, I think it really works for him. I mean, I just think it suited his voice. He's having some fun with it. You know, it's kind of a, even though it isn't, they're not lighthearted lyrics exactly, but he, you know, he makes it his own, you know, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
You know, and that galloping bass is...
it was, well, it did. I mean, he was certainly catering to the hot song, sound of the time.
Sure, that galloping bass sounds a lot like what Yvonne Elliman. You think she's about to start singing?
Well, and that's, you know, and that touches on what we're, you know, talking about today, that there are these times where they did try to, you know, adapt to...
The same thing about Strawberry Fields.
Now, Ken, I want you to note that really seemed directed at your choice. And
to each his own. I can live with it.
To each his own.
Yes.
You were saying,
but I, you know, I think that there are a lot of fans who are so used to the traditional sound of an artist that it's tough for them to adapt to when they tried to change.
Ma'am, I'm quite sure you're correct here. I want to be on record saying that. Kid, if you could...
Oh, wait, I've got a question.
To say, if I may. You know, you think about it, right? With that, we've all seen the Dick Clark footage, when even Strawberry Fields, great Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane, and the kids were like, oh, I don't know about this. Well, you know, it doesn't sound like that.
I don't like their hair.
And stuff. Yeah, you know, I happen to love drowning in the sea
a lot of
times. I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
So you're supporting Ken, is what you're saying. And this only in this.
Not if you talk about certain other albums.
Good.
This one.
Mind
games.
Okay.
All right. You're used to hearing things a certain way.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden somebody wants to do something new. It's almost like, you know, an actor, an actress does comedy all his life. Or, you know, when Robert De Niro all of a sudden is doing comedy. It's almost like hard to accept it first, you know. And you have a harder time enjoying it because... to do what, you know, he does.
Yeah.
Very good point.
Totally.
Very good point.
Yeah.
Now, Kit, if you can, you know.
Yep, I can decipher this here. So one area, and unfortunately, you know, we don't have as much to choose from with John's solo material, but this is a song that I actually kind of got into a fight about with a friend.
Tell us more.
Yeah, well, it wasn't like a slapping, you know, kind of fight or anything.
Was it a duel?
And so it was close. Oh, yeah. I mean, it got pretty heated.
Real Hamilton kind of stuff.
That's right. One of my all-time favorite John songs is Bless You. I think it's a beautiful song. And this friend of mine said, it is just typical soft 70s. You know, just that typical soft 70s sound, and, you know, that's not really, quotes, really him.
Are you still friends with them?
No, actually.
By the way.
No, we moved away. That's
okay, but she doesn't take prisoners.
No,
I mean,
that's right.
I can tell you, the queen of all Beatles media.
That's right. We actually did also get into a fight in a Starbucks once over pipes of peace, but that's a whole other episode.
Right, they had to clear the place out.
Almost.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, it was.
Didn't you have the green tea latte?
That's right. Yep, threw it right at him. But anyway,
all that matcha just rolling down the face.
but Bless You is one of my favorites. It was a little different for him, not in terms of. Bearing his soul and his emotion, that was nothing new, but that sort of softer side that, you know, would really be further developed on Double Fantasy, which, by the way, was not beloved by critics when it first came out. A lot of them accused him of selling out and saying, oh, it's just adult contemporary, you know, this isn't, quotes, the real John. I mean, there were some, you know, that said that. And so Bless You was kind of another example, seemingly, of that. It's always been one of my favorites. Yes, so he changed his sound a little bit in the 70s, so what? I mean, I think it's beautiful. The lyrics are, you know, heartfelt. I love the chord changes. It's just a beautiful ballad.
I think I'll play a few bars.
Well, will you please do that, Ken?
And I, knowing how you might react, I will refrain from making any criticism.
That's right. Yeah, you know it's going to be...
That it may be out of place for John Lennon, even in his oeuvre.
Yeah, I think so, and that may be what some
people... But not for the 70s.
No, not for the 70s, but what a vocal performance. I mean, I love that. I just think it's beautiful, doing a little something different with his voice, and what's wrong with that?
And he still sounds like him.
Exactly.
Really.
Exactly.
It's just like sweet.
Right, but it doesn't overshadow who he is and you know, his lyrical style. And that's, to me, you know, that's a successful adaptation of current sounds.
You know, nobody's going to argue with you, though, after the Starbuck.
That's right. You don't know what will happen.
Actually, Nightingale covered it. I don't know if any of you
know. Oh, I didn't know that.
With Right Back Where We Started From.
Yeah.
I got that album, which is, you know, I love that song, and I'm like, is this the same Bless You that John did, and it's on the album.
I've got to check that out.
I got it too.
If you don't know that, then.
Yeah. Wow.
I don't know every cover.
Okay. I thought you did.
Yep. Wow.
But one thing about Bless You that I think we should bring up, and you actually just triggered something else. When sometimes the Beatles in their solo careers went into songs that had jazz tones, mm-hmm. and I think Bless You is a great example of that. Same thing with a song like Learning How to Love You from George Harrison.
Yes.
There are certain songs based on the chord progressions and all, they really work well with a jazz arrangement. And certainly when you hear Bless You, especially with the sax in there and the solo, it's very jazzy. I can certainly hear jazz artists covering something like that.
Agreed.
But, yeah. Okay. Next one?
Yeah, please. You're the...
Well, since we got 3/5 of the group here in the building, we should bring up Back to the Egg, because Paul was working with Chris Thomas, his old friend from Abbey Road days and the White Album, and I think every time that Paul uses Chris Thomas, he tries to bring out a harder edge in his music. And coming out at a time when punk rock was becoming very popular, he was an ideal producer for that album. And I think that certain songs on that album, especially Spin It On or Old Siam Surf, have a real edge to them, and it works really well. I think a lot of people would have preferred it if most of the album was like that. But I do like the fact when he worked with Chris Thomas that it brought out that side of Paul. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, we were fortunate enough to interview Chris Thomas during the Monmouth University White Album Conference that Ken organized. And we did a sit down with him, and one of the things I talked to him about was, I said, you know, you were so good, like with Elton John, particularly. There was a case where Chris Thomas successfully, you know, updated his sound for the 80s. He, of course, had a number of hits in the 80s. But again, they mostly did not, you know, Elton John didn't have to compromise. I mean, they still, you know, had that classic, you know, sound. I mean, that the songwriting, his voice, his piano. But I feel he was never, you know, he never compromised the sound. I mean, you still knew it was Elton John, but it just had perhaps some, you know, different tempos or some different instrumentations to fit in. And, you know, I mean, gosh, you could sit and list all day. But
I think Old Siam Sir would be a fun play for just a few bars. Mm-hmm. What a great song.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Sure.
I wonder if we'll get like a special edition of this later.
Oh, I hope.
I hope so.
A dozen other times. Steady drums.
Oh.
big screaming vocal, helter skelter like. It has that great middle section where it all just kind of gels and explodes together.
Mm-hmm.
Good selection, very good selection. And we learned in that podcast, which they can find, right?
By going to YouTube, Facebook, our Facebook page, and on virtually any software you use to listen to podcasts.
One of the great revelations that Chris shared with us was that if you love Back to the Egg, and we do, even Ken and I agree on this, I mean, it's a great record, agreeing as we do, we owe David Bowie, right, for this record existing in the way we know it. There's a great story about Bowie showing up toward the end of the record when Paul was really second-guessing himself about the contents. And Bowie basically said, what, you know, just leave it alone.
Is that what he said? I thought he said that he didn't really care for it, and that made Paul want to put it out.
Was that the way it played? We're all going to have to go back and watch that episode.
We all have to go back. Yeah. It's a great episode.
We got to go back.
Yeah, we're going to go back. Now we don't agree. So there you go. It was nice while it lasted. Kit.
All right. Now, do we want to do unsuccessful? Do we want to do that next?
You know, there's a distinction here between creatively successful and commercially successful.
Right.
And a lot of people think Back to the Egg was not commercially successful. It only went to number 8 on the charts. And for a Paul McCartney album, at that time especially, that would probably be considered a flop.
Yeah.
To the point where Paul never goes back and plays anything for that album.
Yeah, he makes a right turn. Yeah.
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 So why didn't that album do better?
Mm-hmm. Well, he blamed his new label.
Yeah.
considerably with Columbia. It's also, though, when you go back to the summer of 1979, there's an enormous amount of competition.
Mm-hmm.
You have lots of different genres really flourishing. It's a perfect storm. And again, a top 10 album in that period is a heck of a thing. You know, you've got the Cars riding high, Donna Summer, et cetera, et cetera. It was quite a period.
Yeah.
Blondie, you name it. I mean, it was a really interesting period. It was very competitive.
There was never a strong single to come from it. I mean, Getting Closer was the first single, and I love Getting Closer, but it didn't do that well.
Maybe they should have put Goodnight Tonight on it.
Yeah, I think they should have. I think, yeah, because that was more, you know, commercial, I guess you'd say. Although Arrow Through Me is one of my favorites.
That's a fun tune.
That is a great tune.
So what, if you were sharing another example, Kit, which you're about to do.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back to Ringo, and I think Ken Michaels won't be surprised at my choice. Weight of the World. I thought that was a strong, strong single. That and the whole album should have done better than they did. I don't know why. I think it may have been, I think it just wasn't promoted enough. I think it was a small label he was on, and you know, I don't think they put in the time and money that was necessary. So, but Weight of the World, first of all, produced by one of my favorite producers, Don Was. He does some incredible work. And Was Not Was, by the way, if you check their stuff out, it's really, it's nutty, but it's great. It's hard to categorize. But he does a great job of, you know, there are some Beatle-esque elements to it, I suppose, but, you know, but it's still Ringo. I mean, kind of, you know, being encouraging and you know, letting go of pain. And it's catchy, again. You've got those great, you know, and this was early 90s, so, but that kind of, you know, strong, like, echo on the drums, the reverb, which was, you know, a hot sound in the 80s and maybe early 90s. And I just thought it was such a strong comeback because when you heard it, it was still Ringo. You know, I mean, it didn't try to turn him into something he wasn't. And I thought, you know, it really, the you know, knew not to do too much with his voice, you know, that I mean, he sang in his comfortable range. And I just thought it sounded contemporary, but as I said, very much Ringo. It's hard to describe. I mean, you know,
well,
what
we'll
I'd say,
it
optimistic.
So
yeah.
People will hear it, but
yeah.
Ringo must have thought it was successful enough. It was on his most recent compilation.
Yeah, strong sale.
Yeah. Now, before we do play it, though, did you lose any friendships over this song?
No, this one, everybody backed me up. Yeah.
Nice. Well, they knew better by then.
That's right.
I mean, that's... Sound very much like Ringo,
doesn't it? Yeah.
If there's a moment when he's staying in his lane, whatever that is,
yeah,
he's in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very much a 60s sound with the jangly guitars and everything brought into the early 90s. Weight of the World is definitely one of the best singles that he ever put out.
Yeah.
And it's very discouraging in a way. I mean, Ringo lost sales. His sales plummeted after Goodnight Vienna, that far back.
Mm-hmm.
He was never able to regain that momentum that he had with Ringo and Goodnight Vienna, even though many of his albums have been very good, and Time Takes Time has 10 tracks on it, every single one of them is good.
Yeah.
And he had four different producers working on the album. It all sounded very contemporary, all very catchy. If Time Takes Time was the follow-up album to Ringo, it would have been a top 10 album.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, it would have really seemed ahead of its time, too.
Yeah.
If we're going to play this Time Machine game, which I enjoy, that would be fun. What do you have up next, Ken?
How about McCartney 2 album? Paul's gotten a lot of credit for experimenting with a lot of electronic music, and sometimes I think he gets a little bit too much credit, to be honest with you. I like what he did on this album, his experimentation with electronic sounds, especially on something like Temporary Secretary or Bogey Music or the instrumentals on there. I like all that, you know, but truth be told, I mean, the mid-70s, there were a lot of bands like Kraftwerk that were doing similar things back then. But I like what he did. I just, you know, I like those experimentations. This McCartney 2 as an album, I felt in terms of the quality of the songs was not one of the strong albums. But I liked and I appreciate the fact that he dabbled in that.
If we were going to play a cut for just one or two moments, what would it be?
Well, I love
And then which edition do we use?
How about Bogey Music?
Okay. Some quiet time we can share together. Once again, you have all those melodies, right, coming together, and in this interesting tapestry.
I play that song every year on Halloween on my show.
Nice. Is it a little scary for you? Is it kind of a...
Yes.
Okay,
scares
nice.
The hell out of me.
Nice. Nicely done. Yes, sir. Oh, interesting. Interesting observation about Too Many People. A great tune indeed. Mm-hmm. You mind if I take one real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
I'm stealing this directly from Ken Michaels, which gives me some pleasure. but it's such an excellent choice because it John Lennon would very publicly credit part of his reawakening to Paul McCartney with the coming up when he heard it on the radio, and he was tooling around with Fred Seaman on the way to Long Island, I think it was. And John heard it and instantly knew it was Paul, but it was different and was excited by that. And by the end of the year, of course, in 1980, we have John working so very, very hard for Yoko to have a what he believed would be a big hit, and was to many a certain extent, with Walking on Thin Ice. And that backing track is just magnificent. I do happen to have it. And you can really hear something quite interesting taking place that sadly, obviously, we will never know what the next chapter necessarily was. But as I note from being able to read your highly legible notes, the guitar work in particular that John is working on, and our friend Jack Douglas, who's also in the building right now, helped him with by playing the whammy.
That.
Yeah, Jack played the whammy bar while John strummed those chords.
Yeah.
And let's just have a quick taste of that. This is the instrumental backing track. Probably imagine it, right? John playing the chords and Jack working the whammy bar, and that was recorded on the evening of Thursday, December 4th, 1980, and quite literally John's last creative act. Yes, sir.
Steve Miller stole that for Abracadabra.
I've been saying that for years. Most people don't believe me. There's such a similarity.
Really, think about it. Abracadabra and that song.
To the note.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
As with other songs.
Yeah. Nice. Well spotted. But certainly an interesting trend that John was taking.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a little new wave in there. It's got a little dance. It's got, you know.
Definitely an edge.
Yeah, it definitely is an edge.
Yeah.
For sure.
Nice. Very nice. Now, we did promise presents. I don't know if you remembered that part.
Yep.
No, we did. We said there'd be stuff. Swag.
Yep.
And we will get to the swag.
Yes.
But we do, we have a few minutes left. We have time for some trivia questions.
Yep. And the winners, there will be two winners. So
two winners.
Okay.
You will get a very limited edition Talk More Talk tote.
I don't have that.
And,
I'm going to try on these questions.
Don't listen to him. And there are some little goodies inside, some little tchotchkes that I think you will enjoy. And then all of you, after we're done here, come on up and get a limited edition Talk More Talk pin. So
any other stock of these will be destroyed.
That's right.
To underscore that limited edition nature.
Exactly. So, yep. So, Ken, do you have trivia questions we can give out?
Sure. Nobody yell out the answers. Just raise your hand. No yelling.
Unless it's a Ken.
And the first one that gets it right wins, right?
Yeah. What two songs that ended up on Red Rose Speedway were first recorded during the Ram album?
Oh, that's a good one, Ken. That's a good one.
Everybody all at once.
A lot of fights in Starbucks. This fellow in the deep back had his hand up first.
Okay.
So deep backer, what's one and two?
Little Lamb, Dragonfly, and Get on the Right Thing.
Here you go.
Wow. Whew. That's a mic drop. Little Lamb, Dragonfly, and Get on the Right Thing. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Nice. I mean, did he get that right? I would not have gotten that
he
right.
He got it right.
And Kid is passing out gifts. That is... Try not to poke at her, you know, like you heard about the Starbucks incident. So nobody wants that kind of trouble. Okay, Ken, you have another one.
Sure. There's a game that I play on my show occasionally and on my website called Think for Yourself. And I mentioned four titles of songs, and you have to name what they all have in common with each other. Something very unique they all have. So the four songs would be God, Maya Love, I'm the Greatest, and Baby Don't Run Away.
Whoa, this is a deep cut. This is a deep cut.
Are they all in the same key?
No.
That would have been good.
Yeah. Good, good, right?
Yeah.
Shoot.
Yeah, you really should talk to Ken about that.
Tonight?
Yes, soon.
Done.
Yes, so, wow, deep back again.
Okay. Whoa!
Give it to the man.
That's a ridiculous question.
I got a CD to give.
Oh, okay. Why don't you do that?
Randy Bachman. Randy Bachman put out a CD last year. It's all the George Harrison tribute. Do you want it?
The queen of all Beatle media will bring this to you.
That's a ridiculous question. That is like...
He's calling you ridiculous.
Yeah, no, in a very good way. That's awesome.
Don't you want challenge?
There is no good way.
It's ridiculous. QABM. Well done, Queen.
All right, Ken, do you want to do one more?
What was the last number one single any of the Beatles had in their solo careers in the United States on the Billboard charts? Yep.
I believe this fella right here was first. Yes, sir.
Got my mind set on you?
There you go.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
There
yeah.
You go.
It just brings so many luscious high school memories back to Kit.
Yeah.
And you and Kit.
Yes.
Just don't fight with her in Starbucks. We learn a lot on this show every time.
Yeah,
well, hey, thank you so much, folks. We sure appreciate you being here with us. I'm not sure who's up next, but it may be Chuck Gunderson. Is it true?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Rob, Chuck, Darren.
And Darren.
Yeah, yeah.
This.
Yes. Oh, yes, indeed.
This episode should be up by Monday night.
Right, and their episode will be all about Ken Michaels.
Yep.
So
that's right. And come
look forward
on up
to that.
And come on up and get a pin. These
right.
are limited edition Talk More Talk pins. You can
thanks
wear
so
them.
Much for being with us.
Yep.
But
thank
can
you.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
Three of the members of Wings are across the hallway there. I want to thank all of you for being in here.
Yes,
to
thank
this.
You.
That's
so
right.
You guys are awesome.
You guys are great.
You're rocking.
They could
show.
Still catch them, though. Is that what you're saying, Ken?
Well,
you could stay with us.
Yeah.
Thank you very much,
thank
everybody. What?